Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. What is on the docket today? Well, Judge Boyce is making some rulings in the DeBell-Vallo matters. Can you guess what the word of the day is? Does the alleged yoga instructor murder suspect now know what a wild card search is? I bet she does. An update on the now free on bond bodega worker in New York. One final last word on Derek Chauvin. A jail deputy gets 20 years for trying to decapitate his wife. And today's dumb criminal, well, guess what? It's a police officer. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, you know the drill. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, like the video if you do, and leave me a comment. Hit that little bell so you get notifications. As always, please support those that support Crime Talk.
Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high-quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked.
All right, let's go ahead and open the record for July 7th of 2022. The word of the day in the Lori Vallo matter is denied. Remember, John Pryor filed a couple of motions way back in March asking Judge Boyce to disqualify the Madison County prosecuting attorney, Rob Wood, from representing the state of Idaho in the case against his client, Chad DeBell. Now, the motions were filed under seal, so it's not exactly known why Mr. Pryor made the request. But let me refresh your memory. Do you remember early on in the case? That's right. Lori Vallo's attorney, Mark Means, filed motions to disqualify Mr. Wood, saying that he had intimidated and tampered with essential witnesses in the case. We had the audio. We listened to the audio together. And, well, there was nothing there that I thought was inappropriate on the part of Mr. Wood. Now, Mr. Means had this idea that that was witness tampering. Well, Pryor kind of went along with it because they already did this, and I understand he filed the motion. This is a death penalty case. He needs to file every motion that he can file in an attempt, in good faith motion, to litigate issues to preserve on appeal, assuming his client will be convicted. Now, like we've talked about, all these motions are filed under seal, and I'm not exactly sure why. Normally, something is filed under seal if there's a minor involved, if there is an allegation of some sort of sexual assault, or if there is some sort of document that's being attached that may have some personal identifying information, I don't know, like your social security number, your medical records, and those can be suppressed under the electronic filing system. So once again, I am complaining. I do not understand why everything is filed under seal in this particular case. There's nothing that I can possibly think of that is going to offend the people of Idaho that Lori Vallo and Chad DeBell are not going to get a fair trial. Now, additionally, the district attorney filed a motion to disqualify Rachel Smith. As you may recall, she was basically hired by the state of Idaho to assist in a death penalty case because she had death penalty experience. And she wasn't admitted into Idaho, so she was admitted under what is the term pro hoc vice admission, because she's technically, or is not just technically, she is licensed in the state of Missouri. And what that means is that an attorney in the state where she's being admitted will basically supervise her be familiar with the facts and the law, etc., but it allows them a limited license to practice law in the state, usually for a case-by-case basis. Once again, these issues were already ruled upon, and I just don't understand what the basis would be to try and disqualify her as the prosecutor in this particular case. Well, needless to say, the judge denied both of the motions to disqualify the prosecutors. And as I stated, we have a right to know and see what is being filed in these cases. There's nothing that is so secretive, nor can I anticipate that would affect the fair administration of justice in either way. Frankly, though, I think both sides like this in this particular case because then they don't have to, well, face criticism or praise from either side or commentary that's going on in this particular case. Now, as I stated, usually in death penalty litigation, there are a flurry of motions filed. I mean, from challenging the death penalty statutes at issue, arguing that it's cruel and unusual punishment, violates due process, you name it. And most litigators would basically file motions that have been filed in other death penalty cases to preserve those issues on appeal. And from what we can tell, and who knows, because everything's being sealed, we don't know if any of those motions are in fact being filed. But it'd be nice to know if they were, because one of the issues, obviously, if there's a conviction, will be the effective assistance of counsel. And the issue would be, did they engage in the appropriate motions practice to defend their clients? Mr. Pryor also filed an additional motion wanting to basically get a list of all of the cases where Ms. Smith has participated in any death penalty cases, either in Missouri or anywhere else. Now, that was denied. And why the prosecutor would have to turn that over, what relevance there is, I don't know. But that's just something that the defense would investigate on their own. To have to ask the court for that and then be denied, I mean, what the court should have said was, well, denied, which is what the court said, but that's something the defense has to do on their own. The prosecution's not entitled to turn that over. So the word of the day is denied. You don't get a list of cases where Ms. Smith has been a prosecutor in death penalty cases. And guess what? You get the prosecutors that you got, and they're going to stick around. All right. Do you know what a wild card search is? Do you know what not to do when you go on the lam? Let me explain. Well, the alleged yoga instructor murderer thought she was smarter than everyone else. Guess what? She wasn't. The United States Marshals is pretty good at hunting people down that they're looking for. So when you go on the lam, you can't do anything you normally like to do. You can't call your family. You can't go to places where they would say, wow, you engage in a particular activity. We should probably check those places. Mistakes, mistakes, mistakes. Well, Caitlin Armstrong of Austin, Texas, used her sister's, Christine's, passport to flee to Central America from Newark, New Jersey airport on May 18th of 2022. Well, the United States Marshals were able to track her by doing what they refer to as a wild card search. Now, the Marshals realized that Armstrong's own passport hadn't been used to leave the United States. They entered the details of the passports belonging to people close to Ms. Armstrong to see whether they had used their passports recently. Well, guess what? Investigators hit the jackpot with her sister, Christine. Now, it's unclear if Christine was aware that her sister had taken her passport. If she didn't know, she wouldn't be facing any criminal charges. So prior to her capture, Armstrong had spent 43 days on the run after allegedly killing love rival pro cyclist Anna Maria Wilson, who had spent an evening with her boyfriend, Colin Strickland, in Austin, Texas back in May. So the Marshals said they caught Armstrong through good old-fashioned police work by doing door-to-door searches at hostels in San Jose, Jocko Beach, and St. Teresa for the last 6 weeks. And she had used three aliases to try to conceal her identity. Now, Armstrong's undoing apparently began after she caught a bus from San Jose to Jocko Beach and then frequented several yoga studios under several aliases, which include the names Beth Martin, Liz Martin, and Ari Martin. Now, locals identified her after being shown a photograph. She then fled to St. Teresa, where she stayed at Don John's Lodge, a $50 a night hostel, where she taught part-time yoga under the Ari Martin alias. Local officers arrested her at the hostel, where they discovered she had altered her appearance, including cutting her hair and dyeing it brown, and she had a bandage on her nose. Now, local officers also found a $6,350 receipt for cosmetic surgery in her belongings. Now, Armstrong has now been booked into the Travis County Jail in Austin and was charged with first-degree murder, as well as the theft of services between $100 and $750. Now, photographs show her with a visibly altered look, having the cosmetic surgery, as well as cutting her hair and dyeing her hair brown. Now, like I said, she's been charged with felony, first-degree murder, and theft of services, and she was arrested after failing to prove her identity and only confessed who she was on a six-hour ride back to San Jose. Now, before being arrested, a witness said he saw her with bandages on her nose before her June 29th arrest at the hostel. Armstrong reportedly had begun asking for ways to cut back on costs before the police caught up with her during this routine check. She was just asking about how to get around cheaper, and then the police showed up. Now, Armstrong was seized by the Costa Rican officers after they could not find her fake name in the database. Tough luck. Now, it's been reported that the alleged fugitive left behind two American passports in a locker where she had been storing things. One of the documents apparently bore her name, and the other belonged to her sister. Now, photographs of the documents show one passport bearing the name Caitlin Marie Armstrong and featuring the yoga instructor's personal information and a picture. The other passport seemingly belonged to a 31-year-old brunette named Christine Elizabeth Armstrong, believed to be Armstrong's younger sister. Well, authorities confirmed Armstrong had cropped her hair at shoulder length and dyed it brown. This was obviously an attempt to better resemble Christine. Now, the receipt for the cosmetic surgery doesn't indicate exactly what services were provided, but reports claim that she had bandages on her nose, indicating possibly a nose job. Now, apparently the staff at the hospital had repeatedly turned down Armstrong's request to work as a yoga instructor, but eventually relented, and she started helping out with classes when the normal teacher had a day off. She was also working shifts at the front desk as a receptionist. Now, Armstrong had led cops on a six-week chase across multiple countries and the United States, including Texas, New York, New Jersey, before she was arrested. Simply put, you cannot outrun the long arm of the law. And footage of the alleged killer being marched into a police station in Costa Rica shows that she's dramatically changed her appearance. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this case, let me give you a quick background. Armstrong stands accused of the May 11th shooting of Wilson, a cyclist whom she thought was having a relationship with her boyfriend, Colin Strickland. The yoga instructor was linked to Wilson's death after authorities found her bleeding and unconscious at her friend's apartment in Austin. She had sustained multiple gunshot wounds. Now, police attempted and performed CPR on Wilson before pronouncing her dead at the scene. Now, Wilson was a Vermont native and a world-class cyclist and staying in Austin for an upcoming bike race. Armstrong's car was seen in the area around the time of the shooting, leading authorities believed that she had killed Wilson out of jealousy. They later found out that earlier on May 11th, Wilson had gone to a dinner with Armstrong's on-off-again boyfriend, Strickland, who told police the two of them had been swimming at Deep Eddy Pool before getting burgers at Pool Burger. Now, Strickland said he picked her up from the apartment of her friend Caitlin Cash on his BMW motorbike at about 5:45 p.m. and dropped her off again at 8:36 p.m., stopping shortly after to text Armstrong to tell her he had been dropping off flowers to another friend and that his phone had run out of battery. But unknown to Strickland, Armstrong had already been tracking both he and Wilson using cycling app Strava, which shows the routes runners and cyclists take. A neighbor's security camera caught Armstrong's black Jeep Cherokee driving up to the property above a garage at the back of a larger home at about 8:35 p.m. The neighbor also reported that Armstrong had been caught on camera the previous day riding a bike in the same spot. Now, Armstrong was questioned by the Austin police officers on May 14th after they discovered the yoga instructor had an open misdemeanor warrant on a theft of services charge. Cops used the opportunity to briefly question her about Wilson's death several days earlier, and after they received an anonymous tip that Armstrong flew into a rage when she discovered that Strickland had previously been romantically involved with Miss Wilson. Now, during the interview, cops showed Armstrong video surveillance of her SUV apparently coming to a stop outside of the apartment where Wilson was found dead on May 11th. The footage was timestamped just 1 minute after Wilson entered the building following a swim dinner with Strickland. Armstrong also admitted it doesn't look good, and a probable cause document for her arrest said she had no explanation as to why she was in the area and did not make any denial surrounding the statements presented to her. Then on May 13th, 5 days before she fled the country, it was discovered that Armstrong had sold her black Jeep Grand Cherokee to a car dealership in Austin for $12,200. Now, a police tipster who didn't want to be identified told investigators Armstrong flew into a rage on discovering cyclist Strickland's romance with fellow cyclist Wilson back in January 2022. So that's a lot of information, but, you know, it's not really kind of a whodunit. It doesn't look good for her, but I think it's an interesting case, and it just shows you these little love triangles, jealousy, rage, poor planning. It all just kind of comes together, and it reads like a Hallmark movie, so to speak. It's interesting. Human nature, you can't do it. All right. Remember, you can listen to Crime Talk anytime on the go by downloading not only this edition of Crime Talk, but previous editions, and by listening to your favorite podcasting apps, which include Audible, iHeart, and Spotify. Just search Crime Talk. All right. An update. The bodega worker has been released on a lower bond. That's right. A New York City bodega worker charged with murder after fighting off an ex-con in his store has been freed from jail after his bond was lowered amid a public outcry. Jose Alba, we brought you the story yesterday, was in custody but now has been released from Rikers Island after his bail was lowered from $250,000 to $50,000, and he was able to return to his home in Hamilton Heights, but he has to wear an electronic monitor and be accompanied by one of his sons. Now, we brought you the video yesterday, but Alba was arrested on Friday for stabbing Austin Simon after Mr. Simon charged into the Harlem bodega where Mr. Alba worked and attacked him. Alba was then thrown in jail and held on the bond after prosecutors from Manhattan DA's Alvin Bragg's office asked for double that amount, despite letting other career criminals loose on a regular basis. Following some outrage over the decision, a Manhattan judge finally lowered Alba's bond today, and he was, as we stated, released home. Now, New York City Mayor Eric Adams visited the bodega to express his support for Alba. He said, quote, "I'm a person that there for the people, following the law. I saw the video. I saw a voter here inside the store following the law. It's time for New Yorkers and Americans to start standing up for the people who follow the law," the mayor said. At a hearing on Thursday, prosecutors from Manhattan DA's office, Alvin Bragg's, moved to lower the bond. He was only required to post $5,000, which is 10%, which his family paid. Now, Alba is barred from leaving the state, and he has to surrender his passports, which means he's not going to be able to take his previously planned trip to the Dominican Republic. But Alba's release is a small victory for the man who say he never should have been arrested in the first place. The video is quite clear. It was self-defense. Now, Alba, who's apparently beloved in the local community, has worked at this bodega for decades and has no criminal history. The attack on the bodega happened when Simon's girlfriend's EBT card was declined, trying to buy a bag of chips. Her debit card, like I said, was declined, and Alba refused to give her the chips. Don't pay, no chips. She then produced a knife from her purse and, according to Alba's family, attacked him before calling for her boyfriend to come back her up. Surveillance footage shows Mr. Simon charging into the store in his $350 Armani shirt, standing over Alba and then fighting with Mr. Alba. Alba grabbed the store's box-cutting knife to stab him in the neck and chest, where Mr. Simon later died of his wounds. Don't show up with fists, apparently, to a knife fight. Don't. When you attack somebody, well, you should expect that somebody's going to defend themselves. Well, initially, like I said, the DA's office wanted that high bond. The judge reduced it. Now, as you may recall, in yesterday's report, we said that there was a GoFundMe page that had helped money to raise the bail and to basically help Mr. Alba get a legal team. And they had raised about $20,000. But guess what? GoFundMe. The people that fund just about everything else in the world, they have a terms of service that prohibits fundraising for the legal defense of someone charged with a violent crime, even if it's apparently self-defense. Come on, GoFundMe. What? Are you kidding me? So at the time, as of this time, the fundraising for Mr. Alba has been removed and all of the donors have been refunded. I hope somebody in the DA's office takes a look at this case. It shouldn't take long. We have a video. We have a man in the store where he works being attacked by not one, but two people. The girlfriend of Mr. Simon pulls out a knife and stabs Mr. Alba. Mr. Simon attempts to stand over him and beat him up, and he defends himself with a weapon. Mr. Simon dies. Well, guess what? Don't go trying to beat people up over a bag of chips, ladies and gentlemen. It can be dangerous. Let's go, Mr. Alba. All right, next on the docket. I think the last and final word regarding Derek Chauvin. Derek Chauvin was sentenced to more than 21 years in federal prison for violating Mr. George Floyd's civil rights. Now, Chauvin was already found guilty of murdering Mr. Floyd and sentenced to 22.5 years behind bars. The sentence in the federal court matter is to run concurrently with the state sentence, which means that basically there's no additional time. And the federal civil rights violation really means nothing. But one thing, his attorneys were able to negotiate that he gets to serve his time in federal prison. That's right. A quality of life issues are much better in federal prison versus state prison. Now, not that anybody wants to go to prison, ladies and gentlemen, but let's just say I've had clients that have done both state and federal time, and they have all indicated they would rather do prison time in the federal system. It's just a little nicer, a little better facilities, a little safer, better programs, just saying. So, although Mr. Chauvin really has lost because he's in prison for the next 21 years, he came out okay in the end. But needless to say, I think this is the last thing we will ever have to say about Derek Chauvin, unless he is awarded a new trial, which we all know is not going to happen. Okay, weird story here. Former correctional officer Wilford Jenkins. He's previously worked as a security officer at the Lebanon Correctional Facility under the auspice of the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, and as a deputy at the Butler County Jail. Now, for reasons unknown, he stabbed his 47-year-old Huletta Jenkins to death, his wife, at the couple's home in October of 2021. Now, initially charged with murder in Hamilton County, the defendant recently pled guilty to one count each of involuntary manslaughter, felonious assault, and tampering with evidence. As part of the plea agreement, he would receive a 20-year sentence without the possibility of early release. Now, he stated, and I'm quoting, "I am so sorry, and I wish I could take it all back," the defendant said during the court sentencing. "I wish I could have her back in everybody's life." Not exactly sincere, but I get it. The victim's family rejected that apology. "The only remorse you have is that you got caught," Huletta Jenkins' mother, Roxanne Smith, said during the victim impact statement. "Why didn't you just leave and let her live? The circumstances of the brutal slaying are still somewhat murky, but what we do know is that the police in Forest Park, Ohio, which is apparently a small suburb of Cincinnati, arrived at the home in Bessinger Drive over reports of a possible suicide individual during the late afternoon hours of October 25th of 2021. There, the police found both the defendant and his wife covered in blood and suffering from multiple stab wounds. Huletta Jenkins was pronounced dead at the scene, while her husband was still alive and transported to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. There were loud screams and crying. A contract worker nearby reported the gruesome incident. The only thing I heard him say was, "There's a lot of blood in there." Now, 4 days after the slaying, Wilford Jenkins was charged in his wife's death. The Forest Park Police Lieutenant, Adam Pape, said investigators believe Wilford Jenkins killed his wife, then tried to fatally kill himself, failing miserably, obviously. The department steadfastly declined to comment on a motive. The 911 call that led officers to the residence made by a friend of the defendant's, who told police that his friend had been out of character, been experiencing mental health problems off and on for the last few months. And earlier today, he'd been babbling about stabbing himself. He said he just stabbed himself in the chest, the caller reportedly stated, and he wasn't making much sense. Well, the coroner's report suggests that Mr. Wilford Jenkins had been trying to decapitate his wife due to missing bone fragments as part of her spinal cord. While her body had stab wounds on the chest, arms, and neck and abdomen, it was one across the throat that looks like that took her life, according to the coroner. Now, the couple had two children, adults in their 20s, one of whom was reportedly home at the time of the incident. The son told police that he walked inside to look at what happened and then came back out. The judge who oversaw the sentencing called the defendant's crime senseless and selfish, and then he got 20 years. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know. Some people do the craziest things. They get big sentences. Other people kill their spouse, try to decapitate them, and they get 20 years. I don't get it. But the law moves in mysterious ways. All right, on to our dumb criminal of the day. Well, and it's a cop. Oscar Mayorga of the Apopka Police Department, A-P-O-P-K-A, spelling in case I mispronounced it, was pulled over on July 4th when a local resident saw a car running stop signs and they called the police, saying that the car was all over the road. Now, he is later said to have confessed to drinking three tall boys, leaving him close to five times over the legal limits. That's right, five times. Our dumb criminal was scheduled to work a shift at his local police department that evening and allegedly said that he'd be fine as long as he had left a six-hour gap between having drinks and starting his shift. Well, police body cam footage showed a bleary-eyed dumb criminal being questioned by police. His face became glazed after being put out on a stretcher and taken away in an ambulance for medical treatment. Fellow officers arrived and asked our dumb criminal to roll down the window, catching a whiff of booze when he complied, as it was claimed. Now, slurring his speech, our dumb criminal, who has now been suspended without pay, told the officers he was on his way to work, but he allegedly forgot about the open beer can in the center cup holder that the other officers spotted. Ladies and gentlemen, it can happen to anyone, even police officers. We're all human. Next thing you know, you're hiring yourself a criminal defense attorney. Next thing you know, you're embracing. You're wrapping yourself in those constitutional rights. So respect them, even if it's not for you. It could be, or one of your family members someday. Always remember that. All right. Now, finally, the creative people here at Crime Talk came up with some new merch. Go check it out. If you like it, hey, order one. Am I going to live or die if you don't? No, but I think it's pretty cool, and I think you may like it. All right, let's go ahead and close the record. Thanks for watching today, and have a great weekend. We will see you next time on Crime Talk.